It's time for Youth Sports Now, the only radio show in Rochester dedicated to the excitement, the passion, the development, and well-being of young athletes. From peewee to college athletics, Youth Sports Now brings you expert advice and helps prep young athletes for the game and beyond. Youth Sports Now is sponsored by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance. And presented by McQuaid Jesuit, the area's only all-boys Catholic college prep school for grades 6 through 12. And by TJT Sports Photography, taking the winning shot every time. Here's the host of Youth Sports Now, the lifelong Little Leaguer, Greg Camp.
And thank you, Bob Savage, and welcome to this edition of Youth Sports Now. I am Greg Camp, your lifelong Little Leaguer and host for the next hour, and looking into a wonderful show, I think, with some chit-chat with Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training. Going to be talking a lot about some sports injuries and the things that take place. And one thing we talked about last week, and we're going to bring it up again this week in an elongated conversation, is some of the protocols that you really need to be aware of when it comes to having your children, if they are injured, on the athletic fields or ice or courts around Rochester. We need to follow, and Mike's an expert at that, and he'll be talking to us about that as well. Also, it is Halloween week. I think that Halloween has turned into what is probably one of the longest holidays that we celebrate, if we can even call it a holiday. But I know that many of the adults have gone out and they've gotten their costumes and they've already been to numerous parties. And as we are in our Halloween week, we certainly invite you to stick around. And our last segment, which is traditionally the view from my dugout, I'm going to go through a few of the things that just flat out scare the heck out of me when it comes to youth sports. And I'm going to give you my top 10 and see what you think about that. And of course, you can let us know on our Facebook page as well as our Twitter feed. And of course, you can always contact us at Youth Sports Now Radio at rochester.rr.com and send in your comments and questions, as you have been doing for quite a long time. And we really appreciate that. Both Mike and I are appreciative of our listeners and very appreciative of the things that you ask great questions of our expertise. And we hope you continue to do that. You know, interesting time of the year. This is a time of the year when really all the major sports are in play, with the NBA starting their season this week. And you've got the NHL, you've got the World Series, and of course, you've got the NFL. An interesting thing that does translate down into the youth sports leagues is that there have been reports now from the New York Times, as well as some of the other publications, the national publications like the Boston Globe and the Washington Post, regarding a conflict with the NFL and their discussions with the players union of possibly going to 18 games in a regular season. How, you ask, does that affect youth sports? Well, in some conversations that I've had this past week with some of the youth football programs around Monroe County and the surrounding counties, there is now a question regarding whether or not they will increase the number of games for the youth and also with high school. So can you imagine having a youth football season extend into more games than what they are now? I'm not sure. Some of them are playing on a 8 to 10 game schedule, some 12. But could you imagine turning those games into adding two more games a season to your child's athletic play in football? Which, you know, brings up the next topic, which of course is the injuries that have been taking place and the fatalities that have been taking place in youth sports. It's becoming a very scary thing to turn on the radio, to listen to the television, or read in the sports pages about the youth of America being, again, injured or in some cases, dying on the field because of some injuries. And again, I encourage you to listen to the end of the show and the view from my dugout, because there's some things in there that I talk about in terms of scaring the heck out of me. And hopefully it will out of coaches, sports administrators, and parents as well. You know, you've got to ask the question, and Mike Naparella and I will talk about it when we come back. You've got to ask the question, if we're coaching the kids right, what are we teaching the kids? And is there a correlation between poor coaching and poor teaching with these kids and some of the injuries that are taking place. I tend to come from the opinion that they are related. If you don't teach a player how to do something right and they do it wrong, there is always the possibility of increased injury and I hate to say it, but death with some of these kids who are out there on the sports fields. Of course, you know, depending on when you're going to be listening to U Sports Now, whether by podcast at WISL or our website, the World Series may or may not be over. So that's a big topic that's going on. And, of course, the regular listeners know that the Red Sox are in it. They're my team, and I'm hoping for a win with the World Series. And I think it's extremely special that if they do it, that would take place in Boston. No Boston team that has won a World Series, no Red Sox team, has actually won it in Boston since the 1900s. So what an opportunity. And it's something that I think, you know, with the events that took place in Boston this year with the Boston Marathon and things, that it's a great thing for the city of Boston and a great thing for their fans, as well as just the fans who love the Red Sox. You know, we talked after the Boston Marathon tragedy about the issues of that with, you know, our kids and the athletes, and hopefully they'll come back bigger and better than ever next year with the marathon, and certainly that you are talking to your kids about these tragic events, both with the marathon and even some of the injuries that are taking place and are publicized in the news. So when we come back, Mike Naparella and I are going to kibitz back and forth a little bit and see what's going on in the world of youth sports and see if we can't come to some sort of conclusions and solutions for you, the parents, coaches, and sports administrators in our area.
The voice of youth sports on the radio and in the community. It's Youth Sports Now on WISL 92.1 FM, 1040 AM.
Why so serious?
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from your home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference. Call Peak Performance at 218-0240. That's Peak Performance. Performance 218-0240. We'll be expecting you.
The best gift you can give your son is that of a McQuaid Jesuit education. Come and see why there is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit during our fall open house on Sunday, November 3rd. Student-led tours will run from noon until 2 p.m. Teachers, staff members, and coaches will be available to answer any questions you might have. McQuaid Jesuit, 1800 South Clinton Avenue at the corner of Elmwood and South Clinton Avenues. For more information, visit our website at McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Coaching tips, practice planning, safety and conditioning, and everything in between. The Little League Coach Resource Center. Go to littleleaguecoach.org for more information.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
And we are back on Youth Sports Now. I'm Greg Camp, your host and lifelong Little Leaguer, bringing you the issues and the topics that are important to the well-being of our youth sports athletes and the kids of our community, and a great show for both the parents, the coaches, and of course, athletes and youth sports administrators. Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is with me, and Mike and I are going to go back and forth a little bit tonight on some of the things that are out there with sports training and with the physical therapy section, but also, just talk about some of the topics that are sort of hot out there right now. And Mike, first of all, welcome to the show again, as usual. Good to see you, buddy. And let's start off with the topic that we threw to the break with, and that is, are we doing something, do you think, wrong in the teaching and coaching of the kids because so many injuries are taking place, or is this media hype? What is it? Because you know better than I do, because at Peak Performance, you see these kids. What's going on? What are we doing wrong?
Well, I agree with you, and it's not media hype. You know, one of the statistics we threw out a few months ago, we talked about, was Dr. James Andrews down south, who's, you know, he treats a lot of the pro athletes and college athletes from across the world. And he's talked about how the ulnar collateral ligament, the Tommy John surgery for baseball players that used to be seen in 15 and 16-year-olds and 18-year-olds and college athletes, is now needing to be done in 12-year-olds because they're throwing so much. We've talked on the show recently about concussions and looking at how those are happening and occurring even in really young kids and recurrent concussions in young kids. So I don't think it's a fallacy. You know, the injury statistics speak for themselves. And one recent a study that I looked at, they talked about there's 30 million kids a year who are playing athletics. So there's a lot of kids out there who are being put at risk. And there's a balance, obviously, between having fun, which is the reason it's all out there, and also wanting to protect them. I don't think any of us question that everyone has the kids' best interests at heart. No one wants these kids to get hurt, whether they're your own kid or whether it's someone else's kid. I think the challenge is that in our overzealousness sometimes of trying to help them get better quicker or cut to the chase faster, or maybe be the kid who's best on the team, or maybe get that college scholarship, that, you know, just like that drive-through window, microwave it sort of mentality, that we're cutting to the chase a little too quickly. And in the process, looking back now, maybe see that we're going at it too quick, too hard, too young. And we're losing the multi-sport variety.
And that's
we're
my
overusing
point.
Things.
That's kind of my point, Mike. I mean, you know, I was going to start by saying off to you, let me play devil's advocate. But some would say that when it comes to criticism of coaches and criticism of parents, that I probably am the devil already. So let me throw this out there. I contend that the number of injuries that are taking place at the youth sports level, and remember, when we talk youth sports, we're talking peewee all the way up through college, that the number of injuries are on the increase because, even though our intentions may be good, we as coaches, we as mentors, may not be teaching and coaching the proper way. I mean, if we teach a youngster how to hit in a hockey game or how to hit in a football game, then, you know, it's sort of out of our hands as to how that youngster goes out and performs on the field and whether he follows our guidelines or our teachings and how to hit. But at the same time, if we're not taking the time to teach the kids the proper way to do a hit in hockey or football, then there's an increased possibility of injury. And I think that's what's happening. I mean, what are your thoughts? And again, you see this stuff every day.
I think you're bringing up really pertinent points. I think when you talk about, you know, what is the proper way? I guess one of the first questions would be, do we really know the proper way? You know, I think when you even look at the professional level, you know, people on different teams wear different jerseys because they want to do it a different way. They all have their own way of doing it. And I think that's even true to some degree of technique. If you look at professional golfers, you know, there may be this sort of sense of what the typical proper form should be. But when you really look at it and analyze it at a high level, there's some really subtle but important nuances in the way, you know, one coach teaches it versus another. I think the same thing is true of throwers. You look at Lincecum versus some other throwers. You have a different throwing style.
Sure.
So is there really a proper way? And I think we believe there is a general proper way, but not necessarily one single proper way. But I think that begs the next question, really, is that when we have this sense of what generally good mechanics would be. Now the question is, who's teaching it? And it was interesting, Greg, that you bring this up. I had a discussion with a patient just a week or two ago who had been a former very high youth athlete who was moving to the national scene over in one of the European countries. And this was, you know, 30 years ago. They were talking about how in their countries, the very best coaches are actually coaching the youth.
Right.
And the very best coaches in the United States who are most skilled, most trained, most experienced tend to be reserved for those elite junior national, college, and then ultimately professional athletes. Look, I was one of those parents who helped coach. There are a ton of people out there who are coaching as parents who are doing an awesome job, who are giving their heart, who are super dedicated, who only want the best for their kids. And I don't think any of us question that. But I agree with you totally that there needs to be some level of looking at it, maybe from an across-the-board sense of youth sports in America. And certainly there are certain sports that have certification requirements.
Right.
You know, soccer, for example, has a certification sequence that they do. If every sport would have something like that, where we could say even interested, loving parents and family members who want to help out need to go through some base level of training, they can learn those nuances of proper technique, but they can also learn about motivation. They can learn about teamwork and ethics and fair play and, you know, making sure our priorities are right. And I think that would be one of those things that might help, because right now we have some really young kids who are most vulnerable, most at risk, and they have no bad habits yet. Some of them are developing bad habits because they're not learning the proper technique.
Sure. And as we've talked about in the past, and so have the guests of youth sports now over the course of time, you know, there's the issue of that the kids, and again, when I'm saying kids, it's our youth athletes all the way up through college, they have their whole future in front of them. And the guys who are getting paid the millions are, you know, they may not have an entire career left in them. But you bring up a really interesting point to me, and I think one of the sports that exemplifies what you're talking about is certainly gymnastics. And that would be where in other countries, the top coaches are the coaches of youth sports and those junior teams. Now, yes, they are elite teams. They are elite athletes. But at the same time, it is still the youth level. What I want to ask you and get to the point of on this is this. You travel to Lake Placid every year, a couple times a year, and you get to work with some of the Olympic athletes that are up there and take classes up there and do everything that you do up in Lake Placid. When you're watching these Olympic athletes, yes, we acknowledge that they're elite. Yes, we acknowledge that in some cases they have these superhuman bodies that allow them to heal or if they don't get injured at all. But when you're watching and you see any of the Olympic coaches, what do you, from your perspective, see different in how they coach those athletes that maybe should be translated to youth athlete or youth coaches in our area?
Well, and just to clarify, when we're up at Lake Placid, it's particularly the high school kids that we're with. We're not really ourselves coaching the Olympic athletes, but they are up there and we do see them some, and have certainly talked to some of those people and read many of the things that they produce out in the professional peer-reviewed literature. And it's very interesting when you talk with them. A lot of times people have this sense that, you know, there's these secret hidden techniques that the pros and the elite teams get. And I think a lot of it comes back to they are solid, solid, solid on basic foundational mechanics and technique. And there's a lot of elite and intensive training that they do to try and keep themselves healthy and to get it right and to be elite and to get that subtle nanosecond of an improvement or speed and quickness and those sorts of nuances in their athleticism. But a lot of it for the sport itself comes down to grinding away at just having good form and proper technique. And oftentimes in high school athletes or in college athletes, we see that sometimes can fall by the wayside. They just are getting a lot of games in. They're playing, especially the travel leagues and those sort of teams.
Sure, it's about games and not reps.
We're getting a lot of games in and we're getting a lot of tournaments in and we have a one-loss record. We went to nationals.
Right.
You know, we won the tournament. We qualified for nationals. And that's all very good. You have a lot of kids who love a sport who are getting together. They're oftentimes a lot of solid, well-skilled players on the same team. Sort of elevates each other's game. And now they go play a bunch of other kids who are very skilled. And that's fun and competitive.
And we don't want to take it away.
Absolutely not. But I think that we also have to remember there is skill development, improvement in technique and understanding of the game and tactics of the game and technical skills that need and should be getting developed. And also the physical training that we so often see gets missed. Talk to some professional coaches and higher level college coaches who oftentimes say they get this higher level athlete, a college coach from high school, or a professional coach from a kid from the college ranks, mm-hmm. who then say it's amazing how more and more in this past decade or two, they have to go back and reteach the basics.
Yep.
They have to go back and deal with fundamentals again. And that's where when we talked about some of the European countries seem to have this tendency of putting their most skilled, well-trained coaches working with the younger athletes so that those bad habits, they're minimizing the chance that those bad habits get formed. As a young kid, let's talk about your sport with baseball. We take a young kid who's making that move from the short mound to the longer mound, mm-hmm. and hasn't quite necessarily caught up physically. Their body does whatever it takes to get that ball to the mound. And if it's not quite right, and if a coach doesn't catch it, and maybe even tell them, look, Johnny, I think that right now we need to move you off the pitching mound because you're starting to do bad things,
yep.
to get the ball to the mound. But so often the kid will just flail his arm. If he's been pitching longer than the other kids, he's got a bit more of a groove than sure. other kids. He'll still get to the ball to the plate. He's going to remain a pitcher. And I'm seeing these kids right now with labral tears, surgeries. Just saw a high school kid last week with a labral surgery who went, and now he's just back to a throwing program. And when I saw him, was really surprised at the mechanics I saw. Now I could tell that the kid's a good athlete, generally has good form, but has a number of things that need to be tightened up to be able to make him not only more effective, but certainly less likely to get hurt. But if he hadn't gotten hurt when he did and hadn't needed to see the orthopedic doctor and then get mm-hmm. sent to us for therapy, the likelihood is that this high school player is going to continue to be a pitcher, continue to have those bad mechanics, and whether it was ulnar collateral or whether it was a rotator cuff or a labrum or a shoulder subluxation, something was going to happen to him because his mechanics were off enough. And I don't know if it's coaches who weren't watching
right.
or it's coaches who just don't know. But at some level, it would be awesome if in the United States of America, what should be one of the most advanced countries in the world, that we would have more training for our youth coaches
yep.
so that kids were getting that excellent technique versus what in some cases is just carrying people who have jumped on the internet, grabbed a few drills off the internet, maybe don't fully understand the drill, the mechanic. You may have five drills to do. Which one do I pick? It's mm-hmm. not a random choice for a really good coach. There's a sequencing.
Right.
But for someone who may not know, though they still have the kid's best interest at heart, they're just not trained enough. But out of love are still making poor decisions.
Yeah, and that's something, you know, we certainly don't want, and we've never wanted to criticize the parents that are out there who are just out there for the love of the game and volunteering. But there does come a time when the coaches really need to be trained and they need to understand the techniques that need to take place so that, you know, whether it's biomechanically and even emotionally, that these things are taking place to get these kids to a much better place. So I agree with Mike, and I think, you know, I've said a number of times that I would love to have a national sports foundation or coaches guidance council that really certifies these coaches, because many times, you know, I know the hockey and the soccer programs that it is mandatory that you become certified. In other of the major, if you will, major little league sports or major youth sports, it's not always a mandatory program. And, you know, I also think, Mike, you know, coaching, and now I'm speaking, putting on my coach's hat, you know, I have had to change as a coach in the 24 years that I've been coaching. I've learned more things over the years, and I've learned what not to do. I'm not going to say, because I know I don't know it all. I'm not the best coach in the program. And, you know, if you judge all on win-loss records, I'm definitely not the best coach in the program. But at what point does your profession, the physical therapy and the sports training, when do you guys, and how do I say this, you know, when can you, when should you, how can you maneuver your way into more of a role with the youth sports program so that the coaches are learning the proper way? Your guys at Peak Performance, you know, Mike Golisano has been out to with some of my guys at Little League, and certainly just through this radio show and our off air conversations, I've had to rethink things. How do you guys take a bigger role in all this?
I think it's a real challenge because obviously there's so much of everybody to go around, both coaches and physical therapists, and particularly that there are some people with unique experience and backgrounds that make some more qualified than others to make those recommendations. So some physical therapists are not people who do orthopedics. They do neurologic care, or they do pediatric care, or they do geriatric care. So, you know, every physical therapist out there isn't in a position necessarily to be well trained in that. So there's only so many people in those venues who would be able to do that. And I think that definitely presents a challenge. But I think it's exactly working together in the community like we did for Penfield Baseball, for the baseball camp several months ago, to find people in your community who are able to come out and at some point at least start to lay the foundation, mm-hmm. plant some seeds of maybe some better stretching methods to do, maybe an injury prevention 15-minute series sure. that you do before practice, and begin to do coaches training seminars. And again, although there's only so many people around, I think there's lots of resources in the community. We're certainly one of them, but there's certainly others who can partner with programs and try to educate people because we just really want what's the best for kids. I know we're going to have business. Kids are going to get hurt.
Sure.
I don't need coaches or parents or kids doing dumb things out there for me to have patients walking in my right. door who need my help.
Right.
So I don't want bad things happening. I don't think any of us want that. We have a heart of caring for people.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that even if they do all the right things, accidents will happen, and we're here to help those people. But we would love to see a community where the standard of care of all coaches and athletes alike was elevated, and we were functioning off of being well-educated, doing things that were safe, but also the psychological, emotional side, too. You know, as we've seen this push toward one sport athletes year-round yep. at very young ages, there's this increasing stress that kids have that if they don't compete year-round, they're going to fall behind to their peers. The scholarships that are only so many out there now won't be theirs to get
mm-hmm.
or compete for because, Johnny did it for 3 months. I'm only doing it for 2 months. If I
right.
don't step up and do it for 3 months or three seasons, I won't be able to keep up with Johnny. And that sort of mentality, I think, though it does in the short term, the microwave drive-through society that in some cases we've become, it does absolutely produce results. If you practice more, you get more skilled.
Right.
And you'll see those successes. And you may even have more wins on the team, or you may have a higher batting average or a higher field goal shooting percentage or a volleyball hitting percentage. But like you said before, what price is paid for doing that?
Yeah, and ultimately, you know, the teaching has to take place on the practice field, not during the game. And you need to practice what you preach, and then you need to go out there and preach it after the practices, you know, for these kids. I think, and I don't want this to be too self-serving to either you or to me, Mike, but I mean, maybe we should the ones who need to start this council to bring things up. I mean, I know in the regular peak performance physical therapy segment, we're going to talk a little bit about some specific injuries and also some of the protocols that take place with these injuries within the medical profession. But it seems to me there also needs to be a protocol for youth leagues to maybe work with your profession. I mean, I think we did the model. I would have liked to have more coaches, more players there to have gone through the exercises and the warm-up drills. But look at it this way. I mean, I think that, you know, if one sports league, just one sports league listening to this show calls Peak Performance or even calls me at the radio station or whatever and says, how did you do it? The model is there that you can teach this. And then what's great about it is that, and I've mentioned this on the air and I've mentioned it to you off the air. What was great about it is that the second time that Mike came out and did the stretching and the pregame warmups and routines, he pulled the older kids into it. Those older kids now, quite honestly, to use the religious term, are our disciples, or the political term, they're ambassadors for the proper way. And you and I both know that as adults, we can tell a 14-year-old to do something. But if a 16-year-old tells he or she how to do it, they're going to listen to them more than they listen to us.
Undoubtedly. I agree with you totally. And I think that getting coaches to buy in is critical. Getting parents to buy in is critical. But in the long run, the kids need to buy in. Mm-hmm. And we've unfortunately been in a situation, I think, when it comes to physical training, where our entire society, from adults on down, have been sort of pounded over the head repeatedly that the way to strength train, the way to work out, is only one limited scope. It's one style of working out. And that's gradually changing. It's taken time to change even our own professions.
Sure.
In terms of this concept of being functional and how our body moves in multiple directions. But certainly the idea of going in the gym and everyone lifts like a bodybuilder, we've got to get away from that. Everyone's not a football player. Everyone's not a bodybuilder. And there's different ways we can teach kids. And I think those are great ways that we can get that ball rolling.
As always, that's just great stuff, Mike. And when we come back to U Sports Now, Mike and I are going to be going into the normal peak performance physical therapy and sports training section, segment of the day. And we're going to be talking about some specific injuries and things that Mike and the folks at Peak Performance can help you and your athlete with.
Online listeners get the podcast or the live stream at WISL1040.com. Youth Sports Now.
Proudly conservative. WYSL. Rochester's home for America's morning show with Quinn and Rose. 92.1 FM and 1040 AM. WYSL Avon Rochester.
Little League, where dreams are made for children. Where baseball's meaning is much more than the score. Where a moment can last a lifetime. The Challenger Division. Log on to littleleague.org for more information.
The best gift you can give your son is that of a McQuaid Jesuit education. Come and see why there is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit during our fall open house on Sunday, November 3rd. Student-led tours will run from noon until 2 p.m. Teachers, staff members, and coaches will be available to answer any questions you might have. McQuaid Jesuit, 1800 South Clinton Avenue at the corner of Elmwood and South Clinton Avenues. For more information, visit our website at McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth Sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
It's been an exciting night at Peewee Hockey, Billy.
These kids have really played their hearts out tonight, Jim.
And now in the stands, two mums drop their mittens, and it looks like they want to go. It's Porter's mom and Smith's mom. Smith's mom gets in two right hands.
Porter's got a real big size advantage in this one.
Now Wilkinson's mom comes in from behind. Wilkinson posts Porter's cashmere sweater over her head.
I tell you, that's got to be one of the most unladylike things I've ever seen.
We got parents tearing up everywhere in the stands.
Absolute mayhem.
Relax. It's just a game. A message from USA Hockey.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from home, where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family, where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance. Topics that support the well-being of your young athlete. Presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
Hi, I'm Greg Camp, and we're back on U Sports Now. Time for our regular Peak Performance segment with Mike Naparelli. You know, it's funny, one of my favorite old television shows, I guess I shouldn't say old, but television shows is Cheers, where Norm walks in and everybody yells Norm, and where everybody knows his name. And Mike, you know, when you come into the station, everybody's Mike, so everybody knows your name and what you do. You know, Mike, before we get into some of the specific talk about some of the ACL injuries and things that we've talked about the last weeks, Just to finish up the segment that we just did on overall coaching and learning and all that stuff, you know, we were talking about how important it is to learn in practice, and that's where you teach. That's where you work with the kids and the athletes to learn their trade, if you will, on the court, on the ice, on the field. You know, you obviously have some very important opinions of that because you're seeing the result if you don't.
I'll give you two examples. One is, you know, we talked a bunch of weeks ago. I was doing some training with Brian Jacobs, who's the Nike golf pro out at Mill Creek, and I've had some lessons from him. And it was a great example to me of the value of having a lesson from a professional where they really look at your technique. So he had me out on the driving range. You know, he put his hands in the club, and he's just having me slowly go through portions of the swing and showing me what it should look like. And he's talking about creating muscle memory. Mm-hmm. And you got to do it slow before you do it quick. And we talked about the struggles that golfers have when they go out on the golf course and they play live and expect it all to change all of a sudden. And we talked a bit about how you've got to go to the driving range and actually practice it with intention, with specific goals in mind, rehearsal swings, getting a groove before you're going to create a change. You can't just go there, take a few swings, think you own the change, take a few swings, go on the course and play and think it's going to be there.
Right.
You don't change on the playing field. The change comes through practice. And it was just a great illustration to me. And he had such a great benefit in my swing already in a short time. But he's got me practicing in ways I wasn't practicing before. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm the guy I'm talking about.
Sure.
I practice. I don't have a chance to play very often. So I practice when I'm playing, which hasn't worked really well.
Isn't that the day that the club head flew off the...
practicing when that happened.
Okay, good.
I wasn't on the course. I was practicing.
Good.
Yes, the club head flew off.
All right, let's get into, you know, we've been talking last week about ACL injuries, and, you know, we ended with some discussion about female athletes and the fact that they tend to injure their ACLs more frequently. And in fact, we are setting up that cheerleading and female athlete gymnastics section for the show in the coming weeks. But, you know, let's talk a little bit more about the ACL injuries, the fact that there may be a tendency for female athletes to have a higher injury. And then, of course, even maybe what goes through their mind when these things happen.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things is that oftentimes an athlete, when they're younger, they haven't had a lot of injuries before. So they're sort of riding this wave of feeling like they're bulletproof. And it can be a real big slap in the face of their ego to suddenly realize that their body is fallible. Sometimes that kind of swings the pendulum a bit to the side of becoming fearful.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's athletes who sometimes are going through that process in their mind of, you know, do I really want to play again? Is this worth it? I'm afraid of this. And so there's some of those things that sometimes we have to work to get out of them to see what they're feeling like. And I think most athletes, when these sort of things happen, tend to be a little bit less cavalier about it. Some show it more than others, but certainly when it's something bigger that requires a surgery and many, many, many months off, sometimes there is that internal concern and distress over, well, could it happen again?
Sure.
I didn't think it was going to happen the first time. And when we talk about ACLs, you know, oftentimes, not often, but sometimes it happens a second time. And whether it's the same knee or the other knee, you know, again, those athletes are wondering whether or not they're ever going to go back and play again. And so we really want to have that discussion with them and try and help them understand a bit. You know, they're going through the struggle of, do I want to go back and play and essentially take the chance that I could get hurt again and have to go through the hassles, the time off from playing and participating in my sport, the pain, mm-hmm. the stress of surgery versus the stresses of imagining what it's like to give up my sport and not be with my friends and do the thing I love. The good news is the great majority of kids choose to play and they're able to do that. But it is one of those stressors that they deal with.
What about, Mike, a stressor? And I don't know if this is something that you see, and I'm talking about something very specific, actually. But I had an athlete who had, it was I shouldn't say simple, but it was arthroscopic knee surgery. And the parents came to me as a coach and they said that the fear was not in wanting to come back and to play again. The fear was literally sitting on the trainer's table after the surgery, after the stitches had been taken out, even during physical therapy, and they said that their son's biggest worry was psychologically he didn't want to bend the knee. And I think often, you know, I had arthroscopic surgery, you know, back when I think it was probably invented, but I remember being hesitant to bend that knee. I was scared. How does a kid get through some sort of psychological stressor like that to not only get back on the field and play because they want to, but now they got to do something like, ooh, geez, you know, Mr. Naparella, this is going to hurt.
Yeah, that's an awesome question. I think it's not just kids and it's certainly not just knees. What you described happens in our clinic hour to hour every single day from, you know, age 8 to age 60, 70, whatever, depending on what procedure was done. And those feelings are very common, and oftentimes after, you know, not just surgeries, but sometimes just an injury, but especially a surgery. You've got incisions, the scars can get a little stiff, you've got some swelling, you certainly have pain from the trauma that was done. It was good trauma, it was needed to fix the problem, but it produces a trauma as well. Just cutting the skin to get down in there and fix it is a stress to the body. And so that can produce pains, and that's, you know, one reason why we really love our profession is that we get to help people through that. Because your natural reaction would be, hey, it hurts, don't move it. And by going through the training that we've gone through, we can try to educate people and help them understand why what they're doing is safe. You know, very often those doctors have given some guidelines as to what's safe and what's not from the surgical standpoint. So we can help educate them that what they're doing isn't going to damage the tissues that were fixed. It's also really helpful when they're in a clinic where people are going through some common things. You know, Mary might be on the table here, but Bob's on the table right next to her. He had that surgery 3 months ago. And Bob's over there encouraging Mary, hey, you can get through this. I had a shoulder like yours 3 months ago. Or Jimmy's over there, and he sees Susie's over there throwing a ball around or serving a tennis ball into our cage. And now Jimmy sees, wow, I you know, to me it feels like this could never get better. I can't imagine being an athlete. I can't even move my arm right now.
Right.
And when they see someone else going through that, that gives them some encouragement. So we try to do that through education. And I think a big thing with what we do is that we really understand biomechanics well. So we really try not to get stuck in a rut of saying, here's the drill to raise your arm up. And when they do that, it hurts. It feels like it's a constant struggle. But we can tweak the way they're twisted or the path they're going through very subtly to try to get them to be as comfortable as possible. And we really believe that we need to deal in successes. Too often in physical therapy, the traditional way has been, hey, you can't do that.
Right.
And what do they do? Well, I'm going to make you do it. And instead of approaching it that way, we really want to try to show them what we want, what we need to get to, but then get there by successes and not by forcing them into failure, because that so often is painful and it produces a lot of guarding. And that's where a lot of that distrust and uncertainty and distress happens on a patient's part.
And it's also a situation where, I mean, I know the folks at Peak Performance at your place, Mike, you know, Peak Performance Physical Therapy is a place where the people truly care. So it's not a biomechanical factory, if you will. It's the folks there care and they understand what's going on both mentally and physically for these athletes. You know, one thing that we promise our listeners, and I want to make sure we get to it today, is this whole concept of protocol. You know, when a doctor does something, you know, surgically, he's giving a protocol for how the rehab goes. So how does that protocol occur and what's the process? And then, you know, how does it work with you guys where you've essentially, you know, been given the orthopedist, you know, I guess maybe some direction. He's given direction to you of what he was looking, what he or she's looking for. So let's talk a little bit about the protocols.
I like that question because sometimes, you know, there's a bit of a, I guess we'd call it a security blanket that can be had in a protocol. And that security blanket, it can really be felt on both sides. It can be felt on the patient side. It gives them a little bit of planning and organization to what the future might look like. And for some therapists, it gives a comfort in terms of having this pre-planned set of guidelines to follow. But our challenge with that is sometimes it causes people to lay back and not think too much.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. Protocols do exist. And this question is almost a bit of a setup because we like protocols, but we also want to be very careful about protocols. And here's the reason why. And we do see, by the way, surgeons completely vary, physicians vary, as to whether or not they have a specific protocol. Some have a specific protocol and have communicated, do not deviate. Others have given protocols and told us, we really want you to think for yourself. You're a well-trained sure. therapist. You've been to school to do this a long time. You know therapy better than I do. But for those who don't feel too comfortable, we have a protocol. But I want you to think outside the box, and I want you to contact me, and let's have discussions about mm-hmm. ideas you have. And we really love working with physicians like that because, listen, to be an orthopedic surgeon, you've got to be incredibly intelligent. You've got to have a very caring heart. You're going to be working for, serving other people all day long. And they're very gifted people, but their training was in medicine. Their training was not in rehabilitation. And so, you know, we have that same sort of spirit of wanting to have, you know, be giving and caring for people and trying to help people. But we don't have the training a physician does. So we really appreciate and honor the physicians and really want to respect the protocols that they put out there. But we really want to, as best we can, have a working dialogue with them. And so many physicians will give us a protocol, and ACL is a great example. And usually those are based on biological healing constraints. So there's certain things we know at 2 or 3 or 4 weeks you really don't want to do to an ACL mm-hmm. that's healing. There's other things that, you know, need to wait for maybe 3 months. And there's other things that we really want to see wait until 4 or 5 or 6 months. And so many of those stresses and the definitions on a protocol are just based on the biology of healing. But what we really like when a physician gives a protocol that has some guidelines on it, that sort of serves as boundaries where they're giving us a flavor of the things they want and don't want.
Sure.
But we all need to understand that from the day-to-day decision, moment to moment, minute to minute, week by week, visit by visit, that an ACL patient, for example, has to go through in the clinic with their physical therapist when we see them, are things that we've got to make decisions on and choose and think rationally and be problem-solving and analytical moment to moment. Some of those answers aren't on the protocol sheet.
Right.
Every single exercise that we do isn't on the protocol sheet. And so we've got to be thinking for ourselves. And so it's really important to us that people understand that when you go to a physical therapy clinic, Greg, you shouldn't feel like you're treated like a number. You shouldn't feel like someone has a piece of paper with your diagnosis right. on it. And what's going to happen is from the top to the bottom of that paper, they're going to follow that sheet almost blindly. Now, I hope that most therapists out there don't do that. I don't think most do. But there are certainly those who tend to rely on the protocol more and others who use it as a guideline. And we really feel it's really incredibly important because of that biomechanical approach mm-hmm. we take to look at you as an individual. So you asked the question about what do you do with that protocol? We will use the protocol as a boundary, as a guideline, as a healing constraint menu for us. But within that, there's a lot of choices that need to be made. And I think that for an athlete who's coming back from a significant injury like that, the only way they're going to develop that confidence, and we would say, we are going to build your confidence by making you competent.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you going to be competent? Well, this is really what an athlete's saying to us, Greg. I hurt my knee when I landed on it, and my knee buckled to the inside when I turned away in the other direction. That's what happened when I blew my knee out and I heard a pop. What they're really saying when they come in is they're saying, you know what? I need you to help me do that same thing again.
Right.
And this time not get hurt. So I think that one of the challenges that traditional physical therapy can have is that sometimes we have the blinders on and we're living in a very constrained environment of saying, here's the safe direction to move in and keep moving forward and backward only. Don't do any side to side. Don't do any twisting. And then what do we see? Well, now it's 5 months out.
Right,
it's time to start agilities.
Thing.
And we say, hey, start jogging and let your knee move a little bit side to side and twist it. And let's see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And we really feel like that can start not quite at day one, but in small ways, very early on, if we really understand biomechanics, we can help that athlete make headway to gradually, in small steps, feel more and more competent. And so that question we talked about is what's going through their minds. One of the things that we see in an athlete who's gone through a significant surgery, like a labral repair or an ACL reconstruction, it's stressful in that first month or so.
I'm sure.
They're in more pain. They're very constrained. They're not even living normal life yet. But there's a different stress that hits them when they get 3 and 4 and 5 months out, because now there gets to be this little bit of a weight on their chest of feeling like, I'm supposed to start looking like I can play a sport here soon.
Right.
Now, am I going to be the one who's successful and I'm going to make it back and I'm going to do it in the reasonable time frame?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I getting behind? You know, how do I know I'm not going to get hurt again?
Right.
And I think that the key, a big key to helping them get along there, is to make sure that we're thorough in our analysis of them. We don't treat them like a sheet of paper, but we've got to make sure we analyze them. So in a knee, a perfect example is you better look at that hip. You've got to look at that foot. We have to look at your other knee. I've had ACL kids, for example, who had an old ankle sprain on the other ankle. It was missing 30 or 40% of its range of motion. And it would be very easy when you watch them land and look at how they squat and move to see that their body's actually avoiding that. Let's say it's their right knee. Mm-hmm. They're avoiding the right side because the ankle just isn't right. They tell me they feel fine, but that may have a lot to do with how that left knee got hurt. That's not a protocol sheet. That's being thoughtful and problem-solving oriented.
So basically what Mike is saying is, in my Greg Camp simple terms, is it's about caring, it's about communication, and it's really about understanding the biomechanics. And you know what? There's no place better to do it than Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training. So give Mike and his team a call, and you will be glad that you did. When I come back, we will have a little bit of thoughts from this dugout of mine on this Halloween week.
Don't go away. There's more Youth Sports Now to come on WYSL 92.1 FM, 1040 AM.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from your home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference. Call Peak Performance at 218-0240. That's Peak Performance, 218-0240. We'll be expecting you.
The best gift you can give your son is that of a McQuaid Jesuit education. Come and see why there is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit during our fall open house on Sunday, November 3rd. Student-led tours will run from noon until 2 p.m. Teachers, staff members, and coaches will be available to answer any questions you might have. McQuaid Jesuit, 1800 South Clinton Avenue at the corner of Elmwood and South Clinton Avenues. For more information, visit our website at McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Little League is committed to the safety of its players, so background checks are mandatory for all volunteers, and that's why every local league gets 125 free national criminal background checks. Little League rules for a reason. For more info, go to littleleague.org.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
It's Halloween time. And I'm not sure if it's appropriate to say it's a holiday that we celebrate or not, but it does exist for candy, costumes, and creating fear in friends and relatives, and of course, tempting neighbors with a trick unless you get a treat. As Halloween is a day, even a time of year when scary things lurk around every corner, I thought it fitting to come clean and admit the things that absolutely frighten me in the youth sports arena. Here's my top 10. Number 10, watching the NCAA continue to penalize athletes for actions that boosters and school administrators are responsible for versus penalizing the system that needs a complete overhaul. Number 9, my increased realization that after high school, there is no such person as a student athlete, just athletes who go to college. Number 8, the lack of credit female athletes receive in the media on a national stage, and the lack of female coaches in youth high school and the college ranks. Number 7, youth sports organizations that do not do background checks on adults who come in contact with the athletes. I don't think that every adult every year needs to go through the process, but if someone is new to the league, check them out. Number 6, youth sports coaches who have not been trained on first aid, concussions, or youth relations. These things are relatively easy to learn, and there are more than a number of both online and on-site seminars for coaches to tap into. Number 5, parents who worry only about the college scholarship and not the athlete earning it. A child's happiness and well-being is far more important than taking out a loan to get your kids through college. The number 4 thing that scares me this Halloween time, players not taking consecutive days off from their off-season sports. The American Association of Pediatric Medicine suggests 90 consecutive days with no off-season sports-related workouts, just normal exercise and training. Number 3, youth sports referees, administrators, and officials being both verbally and physically attacked to the point of serious injury or death. This national trend must stop. No youth league, high school, or college players are getting paid, changing the world, or creating peace in the Middle East. Everyone is playing a game, and responses like these are completely out of control. Number 2, the increased number of concussions that are taking place and being reported in youth sports. I've already asked the question if this is due to increased media reports or if the incidence of concussions are truly increasing. After speaking with medical experts on a national and local level, I'm convinced that the threat is a clear and present one. As parents, coaches, and administrators, even players, we need to pay attention to this and do whatever it takes to protect the athletes. And my number one reason for being frightened in the youth sports arena is turning on the news each weekend to hear about another sports-related fatality or paralyzing injury at the youth level. The sport that this occurs in is irrelevant. What is extremely relevant is that these events continue to happen. We need to look at ourselves as adults and ask why. Sure, injuries in any sport will always take place. But am I the only one who is alarmed at the increasing rate of these injuries? I have to look at this trend and judge for myself that to some extent, it must be the way that we are teaching the kids how to play the sport that they are getting injured in. Halloween or not, that truly scares me. And that's The View from my dugout.
This has been Youth Sports Now, Rochester's only radio show dedicated to the youth athlete, has been brought to you by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance, and by McQuaid Jesuit High School, and by TJT Sports Photography. Visit us on Facebook, Twitter, or our website at www.youthsportsnowradio.com.